Dr. Kenneth Cooper always finds himself at the center of news about physical activity, whether it's starting the aerobic movement decades ago or seeing President Trump overturn his successful school fitness initiative.
So now to see President Trump coming around and trying to reactivate that, and I said, we can't say for sure it's a fitness grab, but at least trying to do something to recognize the need to evaluate our children.
At the age of 94, Dr. Cooper says he still has lessons to share about how Americans can all stay healthy, from teens in school to seniors living longer than ever.
We got to stop and spend the money for the prevention of disease rather than waiting too much care too late. So that's something that we got to get the message across, because in this book, I'm trying to resurrect the specialty of preventive medicine.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, Dr. Cooper, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Well, first of all, congratulations on your recent induction into the inaugural class of the Health and Fitness Association Hall of Fame. Maybe let's start with a bit of the news. A lot of us remember the presidential fitness,
right.
I think it was President Kennedy, test from our school days. It faced some criticism, and the Obama administration retired it, and they put in place the fitness gram, which you developed. Now President Trump has reversed course. Your fitness gram is out, and the country has returned to the presidential fitness test. I'm wondering what you think of this reversal.
I'm delighted to see that they realized the importance of childhood fitness, because childhood obesity becomes adult obesity. Inactivity means adult obesity. So the family sets the example for the children, and to have the fitness gram available, which was originally discovered by Dr. Charles Sterling back in 1976, implemented in the state of Texas back in 2007 as a statewide requirement. It's been there since that time. Been able to show that if we can do measurement and get objective data and can see improvement, that's motivational itself. So I pointed the test for math and science in school because they want to be sure there's a progression. Why don't they test the mind? Why don't they test the fitness like they do the mind? So that's one thing I've been arguing over the years, is we need to have something that has functional capability of improving the health, and the fitness gram meets that requirement. But it's designed originally to be a telegram, as you might say, to go to the school administrators and to the family, so they can start looking at the level of fitness and fatness. And from that, they can make recommendations to make changes, because data drives decisions. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing we're trying to make. So that's why to have the first the rehabilitation again of something like the President's Council, that went down the drain not too long ago, and now it's being revised again. And then what they're going to be using exactly as the test is not really known. Well, they'll be using the fitness gram. They refer to the shuttle run. They refer for the one-mile walk run. Those are the components doing the set, sit, and reach. The various things are all components of the fitness gram. But the first results of fitness gram we had were back in 2008. We got Senate Bill 530 passed in 2007 with Senator Jane Nelson and Governor Rick Perry, because it was difficult even getting something into the school district that was operated by the government. So we had finally got a mandate without funding, and I had to raise the money, about $3 million, to equip all the schools in Texas with the equipment to do the fitness gram, and then to start measuring the results. The first results were amazingly bad. We tested kids from the third to the 12th grade. It even making the top 85 percentile was very rare. And so we didn't have a pass or fail. It was a healthy zone fitness or needs improvement. We didn't want to look derogatorily toward the kids who couldn't make the requirements. But we're able to compare that with several things that hit the front page of the newspapers here in Dallas. Number one, the number of tests they could pass on the six different tests on the fitness gram test correlated perfectly with the grades they made in school. Now, that was a surprise to many people. What is good for the heart is good for the brain. We know that. Next thing, you reduce absenteeism due to disease. We could see that very profoundly. And then finally, we could see there was a reduction in gang and discipline problems in those kids in the high level of fitness. So that should have been That should have been an observation that go worldwide. Unfortunately, it didn't. We tried it in Georgia, for example, which it lasted for a while there. It was used by the President's Council for a while, but it didn't stand the test of time. So now to see President Trump coming around and trying to reactivate that, and I said, we can't say for sure it's a fitness grab, but at least trying to do something to recognize the need to evaluate our children.
That's great. Huh.
Well, that is a really interesting story. I didn't know large pieces of it. So you would say the fitness gram has been a health-related fitness assessment that's affected the lives of, I think we've read, 10 million students in more than 30,000 schools, and it helps students achieve better grades, something we've been pursuing for decades, and resulted in lower gang-related problems. I'm missing how we're going to keep this intact with the fitness gram per se being removed and the president's fitness test being put back in. Is there an advisory committee being set up, or will you have an opportunity to try and what we call it doesn't matter as much as what we do? Will you be able to get the elements of the fitness gram into the president's new initiative?
I can't say for sure I can answer that question, but what we're still seeing with the fitness gram testing here in Texas, we're doing the test, but we can no longer, it's sponsored by every 2 years, the government pays for that to be continued, but we can't analyze the data because the Texas Education Agency doesn't want that data to come out. Now, I can't quite understand that reasoning because we've got to get the information what the situation children are in to make some improvement. So as I said, I've been on a warpath trying to get that changed here in Texas to try to get them, have the data available to conduct the studies or the evaluations like we did back in 2007, 2008.
Well, not only have you been on a warpath, but you also have a new book that's titled Grow Healthier as You Grow Older. We know you are a great testament to your writing. You say you want to help people square the curve. I'm not familiar with that phrase. I wonder if you could shine a light on it for us.
Well, this is exciting. This is my 20th book. Took us about 2 years from start to finish to get this released as of June. I can't even think of when it was. No, but it's going worldwide, and we're getting a lot of great response. But there's three basic things I'm trying to talk about in this book. Number one is your health is your responsibility. It's not the government, not the insurance company. It's not even the physician unless they're trained in preventive medicine or lifestyle medicine. And people must realize that no drug can replicate the benefits of an active lifestyle. So trying to make that point to the individual, if they can get Cooperized, we, number one, can prolong their lives. And we have data to show with a study involving 100,000 people that we were able to get their death certificates and find that with 30% women, 70% men, our people were scoring off the curve. They were living long lives. For example, our women were living 90.4 years, and our men were living 86.5 years, which an average for men and women is 88.6 years, which is almost 10 years longer than the national average. Right. But what they were doing, they were condensing the time of senility and senescence into a short period immediately prior to death. They didn't have prolonged deaths, they had short deaths. If I die tomorrow, praise the Lord, I've had a wonderful life. I prefer that any day instead of having my life deteriorating, my dementia increasing dramatically. I can't recognize my family for the last 4 or 5 years of my wife, but my life, I don't want that. I want to square off the curve. And that's what we mean by squaring off the curve.
Well, that's great. I also want to pick up, because I think I heard the term Cooperize. So I want to get a little more information on what does it mean to be Cooperized?
Well, Cooperize is the key. But we have several things we recommend. Number one is get your weight under control. Now, most people use a body mass index. You go to the internet and type in your height and your weight, you get the body mass index. But there's a little fallacy there because it considers the body as a cylinder. And the body isn't a cylinder. Most people have a pot belly. And that's the visceral fat, the bad fat that causes all the medical problems. So I'm encouraging people to get the body mass index, 18 to 25 is normal, 25 to 30 is overweight, 30 to 35 is obese, and above 35 is morbidly obese. But in conjunction with that, measure the circumference of your waist. That is through your navel. It should be no larger than 1/2 of your inches in height. Like if you're 5 foot 10 inches, that's 60 inches. It's no larger than 30 inches. If you're 6 foot 72, that's 36 inches. So you must measure the waist as well as your weight. There's a new thing called the body roundness index. You also can go into the internet and type that in, and that shows you exactly how much is visceral fat. But the simplest thing is use a body mass index and the measurements of the waist. That's number one. Number two is your diet, very important. But to summarize it briefly, I say 5 is fine, 9 is divine. Number of servings of fruits and vegetables you should be consuming on a daily basis. Average American adult, 3.1. Average American teenager, 1.6. That can be changed, but along with it, a strongly rich vitamin supplementation. At least a good multivitamin daily, but I insist you take vitamin D. I take 5,000 units a day plus the daily vitamin. That gives me a blood level of around 65 to 70. The average American is less than 30, unless you have exposure to sun. And the problems we found with COVID is that vitamin D was the only thing that would suppress that cytokine storm that was affecting the virus and going to the lungs and causing pneumonia. And so we've been able to show a clear relationship between reduction in hospitalizations and deaths and people that meet our vitamin D requirements. Mm. Those two are very important. But number three, I think, is the most important, and that is your level of fitness measured by time on the treadmill. Very poor, poor fare, good exercise period. We must move from very poor to poor. And then we published a famous article back in November 1989 in the JMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, entitled Physical Fitness, All-Cause Mortality. We're able to show that people could move up one block on the scale and increase their longevity by 6 years and reduce deaths from all causes by 58%. Going all the way out to the extreme is only 9 years and then 65%. So the best return on your investment is going from very poor to poor. That takes no more than 30 minutes, collective or sustained, most days per week. That's 150 minutes per week, and that's exactly what's recommended by the American College of Sports Medicine. Next on that list, you must eliminate tobacco in all form. There's no way you can safely do that. Next, you should, if you drink, I don't drink, I don't smoke, but if you drink, you should limit it to no more than a drink a day. Men couldn't drink 2 drinks a day or 14 a week, women 1 or 7 a week, but no more than a drink per day. Because alcohol is associated with so many things, such as becoming an alcoholic, such as accident on the highway, such as cirrhosis of the liver, but also is related to 7 different cancers now. Even the consumption of beer or wine can be related to cancer. Cancer starting with the mouth, with the larynx, the esophagus, the colon, and even cancer of the breast. They claim there's 30,000 women people die annually from breast cancer. Women die from breast cancer because of alcohol consumption. So I prefer that you don't drink, but if you do drink, do minimize it. Now, next on the list is controlling stress. For me, I control stress the busy days I have, exercising at the end of the day. Hans Selye, the famous stress expert from Montreal, Canada, said stress can be the spice of life. Would be the life of life with no runs, no hits, and no error. Stress, I'm under tremendous stress, working all these books and things that I do. But at the end of the day, I control the stress by working out. I go over to our gym. I work out for 30 minutes and recumbent bike. I used to run, but unfortunately, I broke my leg snow skiing back in 2004. Oh. Broke my knee, my leg, and I had to stop running. But you don't stop exercise because fitness is a journey, not a destination. If you want to enjoy a productive life, I'm at my advanced age, you got to keep exercising. So I have 30 minutes on the recumbent bike, and I spend 10 minutes on the weight. So that's very important. And also important in controlling stress is you must get at least 7 hours of sleep per night. That's very important, again, Cooperized. But the final thing we recommend is you need a physical examination, a regular evaluation, because the most common first symptom of severe underlying heart disease is sudden death. 40% of the people die of heart attacks, only symptom they have. We pick up that readily by the stress test. We do here the treadmill stress test we do here at the clinic. And we find 16.1% of people coming here have an abnormal equivocal stress test, and only 5% know they had a problem. So 11% of the people coming here have heart disease diagnosed by the stress test, followed by the CT angiogram, and are immediately placed in the hospital, CT angiograms or bypass surgery. That happens several times a week among the roughly 200 patients that come through this clinic every week. So people come from all over the world now. So those are basically things we call being Cooperized.
I think we just got the whole book.
I think we did.
And really, really appreciate your walking through that. And, you know, it's such a great opportunity to talk with you who's living out the protocol that you're recommending for everybody else, which is very important. But I wonder, what's the role of strength training in all of this? You know, we have a very high priority on this. We regularly see reports that we should be lifting weights, that this is one of the key things as we age. Where does that fit in with the longevity plan or the Cooper plan?
Well, I have a recommendation that because you get past 50 years of age, you get sarcopenia, and that is the destruction of muscle. You lose muscle mass. We know that. So again, I have it as follows. In your 30s, it should be 80% aerobic and 20% musculoskeletal. In your 40s, it's 70 and 30s. In your 50s, it's 60 and 40. And above 60, it's 55 and 45. So again, as you age older, as you get older, you need to incorporate more musculoskeletal conditioning. I'm doing something since I told you I fractured my leg snow skiing, and I've had a weakness in the quadricep muscle on the right. But there's a new technology because the muscle of the quadricep on the left is strong, so I have unbalance. That's not corrected by a total knee replacement. So I have to have some type of muscle building, rebuilding of muscle mass here at my advanced age. I'm doing that successfully now with muscle activation technology. I work with a personal trainer, and I can now see some contraction of the muscle in my right leg I couldn't before. So where there's life, there's still hope. So that's very important. But getting back to examination, giving me a realistic, what should the physician know if you can't have a person know and the physician know if they can't have these examinations like we have here? And then I'd say is first get your height and weight, get the body mass index, your waist circumference, get that. Get your blood pressure, get your blood studies, determine your lipid profile, your cholesterol, your triglyceride, and then get your test for diabetes, get a hemoglobin A1C. But you also want to get the C-reactive protein. Now, the C-reactive protein is a measure of inflammation. I'll talk about this extensively in the book, because we know now you can have a brain full of amyloid plaque and tau protein and never come down with dementia or Alzheimer's. And that's the cause of dementia and Alzheimer's. But it has to have something to activate that. And to activate that is inflammation, chronic inflammation. You may have some chronic infection, this lingers. And you find the C-reactive protein, if it's elevated, then you can lower that by losing weight and getting in shape and taking vitamin D. That's another thing I recommend as far as vitamin supplementation. I take a gram twice a day of vitamin D. Analgesic, anti-inflammatory, can help protect us from such things as chronic inflammation. All these things are summarized in great detail in the book. And if people can just read the book and follow the recommendation, we know they will improve dramatically. I want to tell you something called the Medicare study.
Well, that is wonderful. You know, Margaret, we've produced a number of shows on aging, and one expert told us they've reached a peak longevity and that most of us will never come close to reaching the age of 100. Professor Jay Olshansky says humans are approaching a biologically based limit to life. I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
I don't believe that. Well, in Genesis, it says our body should last us 120 years. The reason we don't last 120 years is not because design deficiency, the way we treat our body. And your longevity is only about 20% related to your parents. 80% is your lifestyle. Keep that in mind. And all these new studies coming out about a new approach to looking at Alzheimer's dementia, they're saying, let's stop and regroup and understand it's better to prevent it than to try to find a cure. I've said that for years. It's cheaper, more effective to prevent disease than to find a cure. And we've been able to show that the Medicare study. And just looking at the level of fitness, monitored by treadmill time, very poor fair, it's an excellent. Look at the 28,000 people came to the clinic, average age 50. We found for 25 years and got their Medicare debt from 65 to 75 years of age. We compared the top 20 percentile, bottom 20 percentile. And we found the top 20 percentile had 36% less Alzheimer's and dementia than the bottom category.
Well, let me ask a question about longevity, because I might be wrong in this, but I understand the Japanese have a longer life than we do. Is there something about their diet or is there something about their lifestyle that is so uniquely different than ours? Or where in the world are you looking at people who have longer lives and trying to understand if they're in fact following your protocol, or is it just because of their the environment that they live in?
Are people getting Cooper IC leaving 10 years longer than the national average? We've shown that. But women are averaging, as I said, 90.4 years, a minute 6.5 years, 88.6 years. That's 10 years longer than the national average, and it ranks as 47th in longevity. Why? We spend way too much of our healthcare on desperate measures that prolong death, don't prolong life. So we got to make that change. We got to stop and spend the money for the prevention of disease rather than waiting too much care too late. So that's something that we got to get the message across, because in this book, I'm trying to resurrect the specialty of preventive medicine. Because preventive medicine, when I was taught in medical school back in the 50s, is the Cinderella of the medical specialty, because there's no profit in health. They told me 55 years ago, I had 2 offices and 2 employees, you cannot limit your prices of medicine taking care of healthy people here in Dallas. People not come to you when they're well. We have 150,000 patients in our database from all over the world. We have a 74% return base. We publish over 700 papers now in peer-reviewed journals, bridging that gap between fadism and scientific legitimacy, exercise the price of medicine. The results are too impressive to be ignored. So let's look at the facts that we have. This is based upon facts. A lot of people have ways to prolong life, and they have their various ways. I won't comment on any of these, because they aren't based upon scientific fact like we have in this book. So as my advanced age, I'm happy to live, as I said, be 94 years of age. You know, have all sorts of plans for my 95th birthday. I said, you better be sure I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be here at that time. But we have a center that has gained international reputation. We have 4 documentaries. We have a 20-minute documentary called The Power of Prevention. We have another documentary that's for physician, one's for getting for medical surgeon. And then we have one that's called The Power of Prevention and the World Impact for Aerobics. We released that in November 2023. We had a woman came down from CNN just to interview me, not to video, but interview me. They put that, you can still go on CNN today, and you can type in Cooper and see the interview with it there. And it's now been downloaded by 729,600,000 people around the world. So our work is having a worldwide impact. And I say, absolutely, praise the Lord. I give him credit for the success of this book.
Well, you know, you've talked about the volume of the scientific studies you've done, the publications, the books, the center. It seems to us in our experience in healthcare that the final hurdle is moving things into there's the realm of public opinion, but there's also the realm of public policy. When Medicare rules, you talked about the Medicare study, but what are the Medicare rules? What are the Medicaid rules? What are the insurance rules? And while it's true that none of those institutions ultimately change what people do, they do facilitate the trend towards people taking better control through access to better food, to access to the medications they need, potentially to supplements. What are your recommendations for public policy changes that you would like to see carried on when you're not here? What public policy would you like to see in place that would continue to advance your work?
Well, if people could be encouraged just to get 30 minutes of exercise collectively for sustained most days, would be the first step I'd recommend. Because we found in our Medicare study, those people in the top category of fitness versus bottom category, their cost of healthcare from 65 to 75 years of age was 40% less just by measuring their level of fitness. So you want to have something that will affect the cost of healthcare in this country. Just look at that statistic right now. It's been published in peer review journal. I've made these 2 comments about we can prolong life, reduce death, small cause, prevent things like slow summers dementia. These comments to both our senators, both Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, that were in office several times. And both of them have said the same thing. We need to get this back to Washington. I said, I've been trying that for 40 years with no success. We've got to get the insurance companies realizing that we can prolong lives, improve quality of life, reduce the cost of healthcare, but you got to put back in the hands of the person. And you look at something as simple as getting Cooperized. It's not that difficult to get Cooperized. And it's all something you can do for yourself. It doesn't cost you anything, but it causes discipline. People ask me, your great success you've had at your advanced age, physically, professionally, whatever it may be, you have any one word you can think of that may account for that? I say, discipline, highly disciplined. That's the people that work here at the office. And I've worked 40, 50 hours a week. I've done that for years, as you know. I work out. And I'm reminded of what it says in Proverbs 13:18, that shame and poverty come those who are not disciplined. I also have Bible verses in my presentations, too. And one that I like to quote is in Isaiah 40:31. Listen to this. It says those who trust upon the Lord regain their strength. They can sprout wings and soar like eagles. They can run and not be weary. They can walk and not faint. That's in the Bible. That's instructions for prolonged life that we've proven with our work here over the past 54 years.
Well, you talked a little bit about Washington. We have the Make America Healthy Again movement, and it's attracting a lot of attention. It also includes an effort to stop artificial dyes in foods. And you've been at the forefront of efforts to partner with so-called, I would say, junk food makers. I'm wondering if you could tell us about your work with Frito-Lays and then help us understand if you think that the Trump administration can win its battle against the food industry.
Well, to answer your first question, I think that the Trump administration can have a great impact. In fact, I've got copies of my book sent to Scott Turner, who's the secretary of HUD, my patient for years, one given to President Trump and one given to RFK, Robert K. Jr. So I'm looking at that. But again, the other question you had was what now?
Well, in terms of the food industry, your work with Frito-Lays.
Yeah, Frito-Lay, let me tell you about that. That happened back in 2002 because Steve Reinemann was the CEO of PepsiCo. And he was a member of my board of trustees, my research institute. He came to me in desperation saying, I know that our products are accounting, one of the things accounting for the obesity. We have a problem with children in America. We don't need to take the saturated fats out of our, I say, you don't need to worry so much about the saturated fats, you need to worry about the trans fats. Because trans fats were introduced years ago because they're hydrogenation of vegetable oil, poly, and that kind of thing. But they have prolonged shelf life, they're inexpensive. And they don't change the taste of the food. So they're ideal. But they ignored it to publish back in 1999 that they increase the LDL or bad cholesterol and lower the HDL cholesterol, increase heart disease exponentially. So what he said, we're going to take the trans fats out of Frito-Lay product. They did an expensive cost, but they did that without increasing the price of their product. That went worldwide. WHO said not long ago that taking the trans fats out of the diet worldwide is resulting in about 16.9 million more people. They're not having heart attacks now because they're taking the trans fats. That started here in 2002. And we tried that again. It was very difficult again. The fast food restaurants to get the trans fats out. And McDonald's was the last one to get it out. We got it out. And it's now made public law since 2006 by the FDA.
Wow. Well, that is a heck of a piece of legacy to leave behind. And, you know, I have to wonder, back to the discipline comments that you made. I don't know if our audience is familiar with the fact that you were trained as a flight surgeon, that you worked with the NASA astronauts. How much of that military training and work contributed to your belief and your experience with discipline is underlying the ability to adhere to these principles?
Let me tell you what happened, because if it had been half my life, I wouldn't even be here today, because in high school, I was an athlete. I made All-State basketball. I won the state championship in a mile. I got a scholarship to University of Oklahoma. I weighed 168 pounds during my athletic career. But then I got into medical school, and I discovered that obesity was a common manifestation of stress. So I started gaining weight just to keep awake at night. My internship made it worse. By the time I finished my internship, I'd gone from 168 to 204. I weighed that much. And then for 6 years, I was waiting in the Army. I was deferred for the draft. So for years, 6 years, I didn't realize back in those days that exercise had a health factor. Exercise was just competition as far as I knew about. And so in my obese state, 29 years of age, I went water skiing. At that time, too, I was hypertense and I had pre-diabetic condition just because of my obesity. Halfway through the skiing up here at Lake Texoma, I got hit with chest pain and my heart started racing out of my chest. So they got me over the side. I'm still in the Air Force. My heart rate came back to normal. And so they got me the next day about the School of Aerospace Medicine for a complete examination. And they said, Doc, the only thing wrong with you, you're out of shape. And here I'd gone up at 29 years of age, I was overweight and inactive, but all the things that I mentioned, all that. And so I changed my lifestyle. I planned becoming an ophthalmologist after I finished my internship. But when I lost the weight within 6 months from my first marathon, I ran the Boston Marathon twice and 30,000 miles for 40 years, all that disappeared. I thought this is a field of medicine that's sadly dark. So I changed my direction. That was an epiphany from God, as far as I'm concerned, that made me change my direction from becoming an ophthalmologist, become a specialist in preventive medicine when I was advised to not against it. And look what happened. We have a full-time, we have 31 physicians on our staff. We have eight different subspecialties here, and we have people we can't even handle. People are waiting in lines months to kind of come through our examination, and they come back because we're proving they can enjoy a long, healthy life that pulls the square off the curve. I love what America, all people.
Well, Margaret, ophthalmology is their loss and our gain.
Absolutely. And we want to thank you, Dr. Cooper, for joining us today. Thank you to our audience for being here. And just a reminder to subscribe to our videos on YouTube, find us on Facebook and X. And also, please share your thoughts and comments about this program. We hope you found it as interesting and truly informative as we have. Dr. Cooper, thank you again. And everyone, take care, be well, and get moving.
Yeah.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.